So for the last hour we have a little bit more difficult topic to discuss, and that's also frequently misunderstood today. There's lots of misunderstanding about it. Why? Because, say, talking 30, 40 years ago, the effects were not so large, or not so, the impairments of our liquid rulings were not so bad. But today, the oscillator phase noise is a very important issue to be understood. Where is our problem? Up to now we were discussing about circuits, about amplifiers, about filters, but we were always talking about starting from a perfectly clean source, a perfect oscillator that produces a perfect sine wave. Such a device does not exist. What we can do, we can build a real world oscillator. And the real world oscillator should always include an amplifier and a resonator. The resonator is the device that defines the frequency of oscillation. But all real world resonators have losses. Mostly are these copper losses in the inductor of the resonant circuit, LC resonant circuit. And these losses have to be compensated or recovered in an amplifier. In order for an oscillator to work, the gain of the loop has to be larger than one, and the phase has to be equal to zero. The sum of the phase shifts of all involved components have to be equal to zero. These are the so-called Barkhausen requirements for an oscillator to work. Now, how an oscillator starts working? If there were no noise, an oscillator cannot start. So, as first, noise is important to start. Every oscillator will start out of noise, well designed. And to start with, the gain of the loop has to be larger than one. As the oscillation amplitude grows, energy is being accumulated in our resonator. The amplifier is driven into saturation. The gain decreases as much so that the process stabilizes, that the product of the transfer function of the resonator and the gain of the amplifier is equal to 1. Here is the transfer function written as an amplitude. I put a square root on the gain because gain is really intended as a ratio of powers, while the transfer function is intended as a ratio of voltages. It's just to explain this square root here, nothing special. But we are still left with noise. And now we try to model our oscillator, putting all noise sources not where they are, inside the amplifier, inside the resonator, but putting as an additional noise generator that's feeding our circuit all of the times through an adder here. So this noise voltage is added to what is going on in our feedback loop here, and we look at the output result. And if we calculate, our output result is our noise voltage plus our output that has gone through our processing, through our amplification and bandpass filter, so our output voltage going. This is our equation describing our oscillator. And this noise, that's always present, will remain present on the output of the amplifier. Now, the bad thing here is that far away from our operating frequency, this noise will be left over as a thermal noise. But close to the operating frequency of the carrier produced by our oscillator, this noise will be amplified by the oscillator circuit, resulting in much higher noise, and we call this thing phase noise. Okay, we get amplitude and phase noise, but phase noise is a nasty thing. Because amplitude noise can be easily removed in a limiting amplifier. It's very easy to remove. But there is no way to remove the phase noise. And this is now the trouble of any real world oscillator, be it an RC multivibrator with built-in 2 transistor, or being a laser diode. All have the same problems. Also the laser diodes work the same way. But just the noise sources are different. Now, what I can do here is the first thing, find an expression for this transfer function down here. Okay? Find an expression for this. Considering that I have a resonator that has a capacitor, an inductor, and various resistors. There is a resistor inside the coil, and this gives the Q unloaded of the tuned circuit. And there are also loading resistance, the output resistance of the amplifier, the input resistance of the amplifier. So I have to take the sum of all resistors in my circuit to get the loaded Q of my resonator. And I express this transfer function with my loaded Q for small deviation from omega zero, from the operating frequency of the oscillator. I can get quite a good approximation using the loaded Q and this delta omega, the distance from my carrier. This is just making some work on this equation. This can be worked out quite easily. In this way, talking about loaded Q, I can forget what kind of resonator I have. I just say resonator with such a loaded Q. And I get out the transfer function. And now I can rewrite this transfer function. I put this transfer function in here to calculate the output voltage as a function of the input voltage. All this is valid as long as my noise power here or here is much smaller than the carrier power being produced by the amplifier. So this noise that is being amplified, but it does not actually affect the gain. And the power is now proportional to the square of the amplitude of the voltage. So in place of this complex expression, J is square root of minus 1, I get a simple expression for the power. And I see that the noise power at very small delta omega will raise up. At large delta omega, this is small comparable to 1. So at large offsets, I just get the input power, the input noise power on the output. It's just this one term. But at small offsets, at small delta omega, I get a much larger output noise power than it was the input noise power. And this noise power here includes both amplitude and phase noise. Amplitude noise, I could also call the noise that is in phase with the carrier, and phase noise is in quadrature with the carrier. So power is getting split equally between amplitude and phase noise. Minutes for one transparency. Difficult issue. So, let's try to reorganize this and let's take just the phase noise because the amplitude noise is going to be killed with any limiting amplifier. So, I'm left with the phase noise that carries half the power and my input noise per unit frequency is the spectral noise density, it's just the thermal noise. For the thermal noise, here I can take the noise from all resistors, and the noise from all resistors, this is already included if you load it, plus the noise added by the amplifier, and this noise of this TG, noise of the amplifier, T of gain, I can approximate this with the noise figure of the amplifier, the sum of these two is about reference temperature times the noise figure of this amplifier. This is an approximation, and be careful about that. All mistakes people do with this equation is they put the wrong figure here from the noise figure. Noise figure is really an unfortunate quantity. Again, it's a source of errors. And then these people in their textbooks, they say, and even Wikipedia says that the resulting Gleason's equation is an empirical equation. Not true at all. We derive the Gleason's equation precisely mathematically. There is no empirical factor here. There is just mistakes we are making with the noise figure. Frequently, we normalize the phase noise to the carrier power. P0 is the carrier power of our oscillator. Because if we amplify the signal, we increase the carrier power, but we also increase the noise. So if we put here amplifier stages, this quantity, this normalized phase noise spectral density remains constant. And that's important for us, to have a constant quantity that we can discuss about. Because amplification is easy to do, but we amplify both signal and phase noise, both carrier noise. Frequently, this phase noise is expressed in hertz, in decibels per hertz. So the units of this normal phase noise is hertz to the minus one. This is frequently expressed in decibels for us engineers, so we have to multiply everything by one hertz. The same thing as we multiplied before by 1 Kelvin for the decibels per Kelvin, not decibels per Hertz, we multiply this by 1 Hertz, this expression, to get the result, and this is frequently a quantity given. In many occasions, we are just interested in this most annoying region of the phase noise, where the phase noise is proportional to the is inversely proportional to the square of the obstacle. And we frequently use this simplified equation. But the whole equation also gives us thermal noise above this corner frequency here, and may also give us increased phase noise at very low frequencies below the corner frequency of the 1 over F. This is another kind of noise that is not of thermal origin, but it has its origin inside our active devices. Frequently, the 1 over F noise does not have a good physical explanation. Even semiconductor devices specialists do not know where exactly it comes from, but it comes from defects in the semiconductor structures. Both devices, like bipolar junction from one single semiconductor, like silicon, or junction FETs, built in silicon, have a much lower 1 over F noise than have surface devices like MOSFETs, like devices that use Schottky junctions. Gallium arsenide metal semiconductor FETs use Schottky junctions. High electromobility transistors use Schottky junctions. And these devices have a much higher 1 over F. As a rule of thumb, the corner frequencies may be as high as 1 megahertz for surface devices, maybe as low as 1 kilohertz for bulk devices. And this depends on the active devices we have. Now, why am I bothered by this low frequency noise? This only happens with low frequency, this is not radio frequency. Even 1 megahertz nowadays can hardly be considered radio. The real problem is that our amplifier works in saturation. Saturation means mixing all low frequency components with my omega zero or F zero, my cap. And this low frequency noise is unfortunately upconverted just where I don't need it, close to the head. So this is a real disaster. All things that go wrong here really go wrong with phase. So phase noise at small offset below this corner frequency, and corner frequency may be for typical semiconductor devices between 1 kHz and 1 MHz. Phase noise will further rise. So things are really getting bad. Well, what can we do about that? If we have to build oscillators, don't use surface devices in oscillators. That's the rule of thumb. So if I'm building any kind of oscillator, always use bulk devices. For lower frequencies, junction FETs, for higher frequency, bipolar transistors. But oscillators should always be designed by bulk devices to limit this amount of 1 over F noise. That's very annoying because it is getting upconverted to where you don't know. If it were just at low frequency, that's no problem. The problem is that this low frequency is upconverted up to very high frequencies. That's the real problem. And what else can we see? We see that phase noise is critically dependent on the loaded Q of our amplifier. This loaded Q always takes place in the equation, and takes place in the equation in a square. It is in a square in the numerator, in the denominator of the ratio. So the Q of the resonator is something very critical, and we have to look precisely at the Q of our device. If we build simple oscillators that have no resonant devices at all, like an RC oscillator, this is a Q of 1. This is something very, very, very nice. Also, a backward wave oscillator Q in the microwave region or millimeter wave region is also a very low Q device. Very nice oscillator. Okay, we have resonators that have a higher Q, but most of these resonators are fixed frequency, just one frequency. If you want a variable frequency oscillator, the choice is much more limited. In the radio frequency range, we have varactor tuned oscillators that have a quite low Q due to the losses in the varactor. Yttrium iron garnet resonators, oscillators, have a slightly larger Q, but these are expensive. This is a choice only for expensive test equipment. All the rest of radio is here. All the fixed frequency is here. A very important issue about radio is that we have one very important device that's called the quartz crystal resonator. This is a mechanical resonator. But our world today, without quartz crystals, stops working. Forget OFDM if you have no quartz crystal. Because the phase noise is way too large of an LC oscillator to make OFDM. So, redesigning electronics. You learned at school that silicon is important to make transistors. And you learned at school that silicon oxide is important to make optical fibers. But far the most important role of silicon today is as a quartz crystal. Without a quartz crystal, forget electronics. Forget OFDM, forget complicated modulation. Without quartz crystals, we are back to the spark gap transmitters of Guglielmo Marconi of 120 years ago. Without the quartz crystal. So the quartz crystal is extremely important. We have ceramic dielectric resonators that are not as good, but still can provide a good. We have ceramic piezoelectric resonators that have a Q between 300 and 1000, so I didn't write very well. We have cavities, microwave cavities resonators. We have make a very expensive dielectric resonators, like sapphire crystal, huge crystal. Very expensive, cost as much, one crystal cost as much as one house.
But very kind of you. Some people can afford this thing. It's very easy to have IQ in optics, but in optics you have other problems. We have lots of problems. We may think about electro-optical delay lines to replace the resonator. Optical fiber has no loss, so we make filter delay line and use electro-optical converters to have an electrical line. Yes, the effective Q is very high, but electrical optical delay lines are very nice. We have lots of noise here, so this is almost not a practical solution. We have nothing that can compete to the cost and performance of the quartz crystal. What we should know is that phase noise, if we have to multiply the frequency, we cannot make the quartz crystal for any frequency. We may have to multiply the frequency. If we multiply the frequency, the phase noise multiplies with the square of the multiplication factor. And that's very bad. At high frequency, we have lots of phase noise. In fact, our calculation method, what it is, in the Leeson equation, we simply put the final frequency here of our multiplier chain, and the Q of our the resonator may be even at a lower frequency. And the Leeson equation works. So Leeson equation always works correctly. It's just the people that don't know how to use it. The Leeson equation corrected for the 1/f noise. So this term here, maybe I didn't say this before. This term here was the correction for the 1/f noise. This term here. If we have it. If it is important. Another way to multiply, rather than using frequency multipliers, another way to multiply the frequency of an oscillator is to use a phase locked loop. Is to use a high Q reference and a low Q VCO operating at much higher frequencies, and use a feedback loop to control the frequency, this high frequency VCO, with a low frequency but high quality, low phase noise reference. And such a device is called a phase locked loop. Now, phase locked loops are very complicated devices. In order to give you a brief introduction to phase locked loop, I would need at least 3 hours of talk here just to describe. They say something about phase locked loop. So don't blame me now if I cannot tell you anything about phase locked loop in the 3 minutes I have available from this slide. So what we do with a phase locked loop, we divide the frequency with a frequency divided by a digital circuit. Even a millimeter wave frequency may be digital circuits. We compare this signal with what is our reference. We compare the frequency and the phase, the most important phase comparison, and we feed it as a feedback to our VCO to control its frequency. Now, the real problem is that this loop cannot be infinitely fast. It cannot be faster than this reference frequency. Usually it's much slower than this reference frequency. The bandwidth of the loop is much lower than the reference frequency. So it can only correct the frequency of the VCO at low frequency. At low offsets. At large offsets, I have the phase noise. I always have the phase noise. I'm left with the phase noise of pre-running VCO. While at low frequencies, I can reduce a lot my phase noise with this controller. Well, this may look like a strange curve here, but this is actually what solves the OFDM problem. Without the crystal oscillator and the PLL frequency synthesizer, there is no OFDM. So forget complicated modulation schemes if you don't have a source, and this PLL is actually a compromise to fit in the requirements of the OFDM. Well, let's see what the impairments are due to phase noise. The most obvious impairment is that the constellation of our modulation, if this is in phase and quadrature axis, starts rotating. It's being rotated by the phase noise. We should integrate our phase noise density as given by the Leeson equation. we should integrate this phase noise density in the frequency range of interest. In the frequency range of interest, where we start with f minimum and f maximum. Unfortunately, this phase noise density is such a function that if we go from 0 to infinity, we get infinity. We get infinity towards 0, and we also get infinity if the integral goes towards infinity. We will see later on the next slide, without approximation, where this does not happen in reality. But for practical purposes, our maximum frequency here is the frequency of our modulation, but bandwidth of our modulation. And our minimum frequency is the bandwidth of our carrier recovery. The receiver should have a carrier recovery, and carrier recovery has some bandwidth. This carrier recovery bandwidth is much smaller than the modulation bandwidth, as we cannot transfer any modulation. And these two are the limits to calculate the bandwidth. These things become bad with density factor over Vm, because density factor over Vm has a very slow carrier recovery loop. And this f minimum is very slow, so we collect lots of noise. A few years ago, when analog frequency modulation was popular, we talked about the residual frequency modulation, and for a speech channel, the frequency limits for the residual FM were 50 Hz and 3 kHz for just speech channel radios. And the deviation, the resulting deviation, was given as an integral, but here multiplied by the offset square. Square root, because we need the amplitude, not the power. Integrate the power, and then we look for the amplitude. Yet another kind of nasty thing that comes out of phase noise is the adjacent channel interference. If we transmit at this frequency, but the transmitter is not clean, it is not clean because it's on phase noise, or our receiver, the local oscillator of our receiver, may not be clean due to its own phase noise, and some noise falls in the adjacent channel. This is interference, and we have to sum up all the power getting into the interference. So this is also big trouble in radio communication. Finally, phase noise also transforms into clock jitter. Again, we have to integrate the phase noise density, and we have to divide this by omega 0, or 2 pi, frequency 0, to get the jitter expressed in here in a radio sphere. Jitter expressed in the jitter and not really raised in time, it's time. Can be also expressed in radius, also in unit terms, in time units we have to divide here by omega. So this clock jitter also has a source in its phase noise. What we usually integrate here, we integrate up to the clock frequency here, and we start out with integration from the bandwidth of our clock recovery system. Also, on the receiving side of any kind of communication, we always need a clock recovery because we don't know the clock frequency, not the clock phase. And the clock recovery bandwidth is usually the lower limit for the clock. As I said, these integrals usually go from f minimum to f maximum. Truly speaking, they should go from zero to infinity. Let's see now what happens without approximation. What happens about approximation with the phase noise? Well, first, at very high frequencies, the thermal noise decays. Decays due to the Planck law, because the Planck law says you cannot have phase noise at optical frequencies. At least not at room temperature. You cannot have thermal noise. But the device, the maximum frequency supported by our transistor, is usually much less than the Planck limit. So it's our device, our active device, that usually limits the phase noise. Or our transmission line, also the transmission line will not work at such frequencies. So it is clear why the integration to infinity poses no problem. With real world devices, we will never integrate. But there is another thing that happens when you go with the frequency offset to zero, and that's more difficult to explain. When we go with the frequency offset to zero, the power goes to infinity, the gain goes to infinity. So this is big shift. This power goes up, 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 and we may cross the limit. This limit here is written as spectrum might normalize spectrum intensity times offset. This limit of 1, if we cross this limit, we actually have more power in the phase noise than we have in the cavity. There is something wrong with our explanation. What actually happens going down is that the noise power gets to a floor. How to explain this floor here, this flat section here? In logarithmic sense, this is flat. We explain this that we really do not have an oscillator working on a single spectral line, but the spectral line has a finite width. We have no perfect oscillator. You may are more familiar with this term in optics than in radio. In radio we say we just have one frequency. In optics we have a spectral line with a finite width, and we will see why that happens. In radio this line width is very, very narrow. If we take an LC oscillator, we can neglect the 1 over F noise with which we look back all of this stuff. And an LC oscillator will produce a spectral line that has a Lorentzian shape. We can simply build the Lorentzian shape in our Leeson's, simplified Leeson's model for the phase noise. The simplified model was here. We simply build in the Lorentzian line here, and we have now the true spectrum of our oscillator. We can integrate this function, and this integral now also cross delta f is zero, also crossing the offset of zero, will not provide an infinite result. And also building this, we can try to calculate the spectral line width of our oscillator. So, before this quantity here was twice half width, or if we call this full width half maximum, this twice half width. And this half width plays a role here in the description of the Lorentzian line. If we integrate this and we fold this integral to equal to zero, we made the approximation from minus infinity. Plus infinity, it really goes from zero frequency, so minus F zero, delta F to infinity. We can get out this half width. This half width for radio oscillators is very small. That's the reason why we forget. If we take a radio oscillator operating at 3 GHz, with a longitude of just 10, this may be a Baraka 2 DCO. With a very low power, 0.1 milliwatt, and with quite a noisy device. Well, 10 dB is not such a large noise figure if we consider that the device operates at a saturation. Because noise figures are usually given for devices in the linear, not in saturation. In saturation, the noise figure raises up, and this is the reason where, this is the reason why people call, well, the Leeson equation needs an empirical factor. There is no empirical factor. Just take the correct value for F. That's it. We get that the line width of this radio oscillator is just 28 Hz. Or 3 GHz, this is 10 to the minus 8 relative line. This is a very narrow line. 28 Hz can be neglected even in quite dense over. So this is acceptable for us. But things are getting worse as we go up with frequency. Because this line width increases with the square of the frequency. So going up to millimeter range, we already, if we build such an oscillator, say for 300 gigahertz, for a millimeter link, we are in deep shit, we are just producing noise. That's the reason why millimeter wavelengths have big problems in building their oscillator. Regardless of the technology you have, it's just the basic equations that are. So, talking about 5G at millimeter wave frequency, it is mostly bullshit. It doesn't work here. Okay, that's about phase noise, a very difficult subject, squeezed now in 37 minutes. And I still have other things to do. Noise can also be used as a set signal. So we have a linear component, and we have a very efficient wideband noise source. We can derive the transfer function of this device under test, linear device under test, just correcting the noise source and seeing the output on spectrum analyzer. Very simple test, you don't need to buy a network analyzer, just need a cheap noise source and use a spectrum analyzer. We can also make quite tricky tests on nonlinear devices. If we filter our noise, we see spectrum ring road here. So these sloping shoulders here are just the intermodulation distortion caused by this amplifier. Can measure the intermodulation distortion of amplifier using noise as a test signal, but through wideband noise with a high peak to average power ratio, if we have such a source. We can also use noise, should also use a completely random signal as a source of a cryptographic key. How to do that? We amplify first the noise so that we can sample, convert it, and store it in the memory. This completely random signal. And this completely random signal can be used as a cryptographic key for any kind of key, like very short keys and password. We can use generic keys for some cryptographic algorithms. Or, if we are naughty, we use a one-time pad, like Russian secret agents. Russian secret agents always use one-time pads. This is a very long key, but an SD card now holds at least 4 gigabytes. It's not a problem to bring an SD key. But when the Russian secret agents come to the United States, the customs officers is allowed to read all memory devices they carry with them. So the customs officer is allowed to read this unbreakable key. Therefore breaking. But the one-time pad is an unbreakable key. Of course, we have to be careful when generating such a key because interference may not be random. So we may have to shield this device here not to pick up interference. Well, interference might also be intentional, so someone wants to give us his key to use this key. So cryptographic key generation is certainly an important use of noise. And usually we use a member of a breakdown in semiconductor to generate such keys. Don't use radioactive devices if you want to sell your device in Europe. Then you have all kind of green parties crying. It's better not to use radioactive devices, but they can be used. They're also we can, a few years ago, there was also much talk about noise cryptography. They used to call this quantum cryptography, but I don't like the expression quantum. You see that I never use the expression quantum noise cryptography. How does noise cryptography really work? We use heavy forward error correction of an hour message. And we transmit our message with the minimum power required to decode this message on the receiver. If we decrease the power just a little bit, we take make use of the properties of this complex code. If we decrease the signal to noise just a little bit, we get to the undecodable part. The message is undecodable, but this is the trick. The trick is in this figure. If you could get to the channel limit, this would be perfect. perfect, nice guitar. Now, what an eavesdropper can do, if he just taps into our analog lab, he can decode the message. But he adds noise. Since he's adding noise, we can no longer decode the message. So we know we have an eavesdropper. The other possibility is the eavesdropper is to regenerate the message completely. But if he regenerates the message completely, then he adds delay, because decoding and encoding for forward correction takes time. Takes time, because we can receive a message. Takes bits time, and we can detect this delay. So this is the trick how noise picktopper would work. We would need a very low loss channel here. So low attenuation channel, maybe an optical fiber or short length, or a Fresnel region radio link. This may be also a low loss channel. So we don't play much about the power, and we can detect any kind of eavesdropper we get. Finally, there is yet another issue about radio noise I want to discuss with you, and this is artificial noise. Can we generate mathematically, without resorting to radioactive material or quantum effects, some signal that has similar properties to natural radio, random, completely random noise signals? And the mathematical answer to this is, we make a polynomial division. We carefully choose the divider to be a primitive polynomial, like prime numbers, that cannot be factored to smaller polynomials, in a certain system. So here we have a binary system, but this linear feedback shift register generator also works in other systems, not just in the binary system. But here we have a binary system, and the XOR gate in the feedback acts as a linear feedback. So this is, adds as a module to divide, a module to adder, so this is linear. The sequences generated by such linear feedback shift registers have very interesting properties, have very precisely defined length, very precisely defined arrangement of zeros and ones, have just a two-value autocorrelation function that have one sharp peak and the rest is minus one autocorrelation, and have a spectrum that has 2 to the n minus 1 identical spectral lines after the clock frequency. And what is interesting about these sequences is these sequences sound in a loudspeaker or appear with the TV screen as white noise. We believe it is noise, but it's not noise. It's really a mathematical sequence. But let's try to use the properties of these sequences. So these sequences, because they are so unique, they can be easily detected. They are a frequently used synchronization killer headers for data frames in any kind of digital communications. They are used spreading sequences in code division with multiple access. They are used for accurate time transfer in radio navigation like GPS or GLONASS. Their perfect spectrum can be used, is very useful for us. We use them as test sequences for any kind of telecommunication links. Because this test sequence is very easy to replicate on the receiving side and compare the results, compare the errors that come. And they can be used for data scrambling or randomization as part of line coding, so we remove the DC components and things like that. We equalize the spectrum and things like that. But this, since these are mathematical sequences, they also differ from real noise sequences. They differ because a real noise has the peak to average power ratio that goes with infinity, while a linear feedback registered relatives, because it says the peak to average ratio of 1. All the peaks are identical with the falling out. And something also people do not understand, linear feedback shift relatives, pseudo-random synthesis, have no cryptographic value. They can be easily decoded by a well-known algorithm. You need just twice the length of the shift register of bit to get everything you need to know about this. So they have no cryptographic value. Forget about the cryptography. Since these sequences are so unique, they are not generated anywhere in nature. There is no known natural process to generate these sequences. Well, this is my idea. How to present ourselves to the inhabitants of the neighbor galaxy? If we transmit just a carrier, then that may be a natural line of some atoms. But if we transmit a linear feedback shift register sequences, and these intelligent beings in the neighbor galaxy know the Bernoulli-Kapitsa algorithm, they can decode it, and they say, oh, there is someone intelligent in the Milky Way transmitting to us. The same way, if we want to find out that someone from the Andromeda is looking for us, we have to look for the linear feedback shift register sequences. This is really something, some basic math here. So, this is all about my talk today, and I am returning in 10 minutes with the quiz. Okay? Oh, I forgot questions. Are there any questions? We had quite a difficult subject here. I was just happy to bring it to an end. Are there any questions about this? With the quiz, you are allowed to use the notes you have here. We multiplied, we gave you the notes of the lecture to solve the quiz, okay?